hear that back when there are seats here that are empty. She has no right to force an old man to do so. Oh no, this is an alliance, it doesn't matter. Not really. I think Nyamboza Damasme is sitting up since move a pool far away. At least this one will accommodate us to ensure that the staff, as they come, they sit at the back at least. And then Honorable Melham, we got a space for you in that embassy. Just to allow other colleagues, when they come and they meet another colleague, they will have space. At least members must be in the front row. Honorable Melham, are you fine? You're in Buffalo City? End of the week, you're going to Buffalo City?
I'm going to Buffalo City.
Okay. Are you happy?
Buffalo City, no.
Okay. Okay, the DG and the Deputy Minister are here to make you happy. Okay, colleagues, let us start with our meeting and great. That also, we do have Wednesdays open for us as members of this high volume committee to deal with some of the issues if you are unable to finish the business because of the sittings and others. Wednesdays are always open. We must build on that and ensure that we do have sufficient time to discuss. There are many bills that are proposed and a lot of work for the committee. It seems we are going to be doing that and ensure that Wednesdays are made available for us. That will be the best way to start working on some of the issues that are very urgent. The purpose of the meeting today really is a briefing by the department on the CWCs, the community work programs, the challenges that are there, and any other matter that they think is very important for the portfolio committee to take note of. We hope that you are going to have a very fruitful discussion on the subject matter presented by the department. Have a discussion about what are the proposals, how do we see this working in the future. I can see them with the yellow overall here in the slide, they're working very hard. Any apology? Members of... Okay, members are here. Deputy Minister, can I invite you and the DG to assist us? Take us through what are the issues and then have a discussion. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, honourable members, and our officials, thank you very, very much for this opportunity. I'm going to be very, very brief and hand over to the DG to do the presentation and introduce the team that we have here, who I'm sure will be able to assist in answering the questions that the committee no doubt would have. But first of all, just to tender the apology of Minister van Rooyen. He is attending a cabinet committee, and we agreed that he would attend to that, and I would come here. Just about 5 points is that the community work program is one of those programs within government, and specifically COGTA, that seeks most directly to address the issues of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. And I think that it should be seen as part of a broader social safety net that we've put in place to assist some of the poorest citizens of our country. The program in many ways has been extremely successful. By the end of last year, the program had created 238,294 work opportunities. So it exceeded the target of 221,414. I think the other positive thing is that we've managed to increase the footprint of the program. It's now operating in 234 municipalities, and I think significantly 84% of the participants are women and 43% of the participants are young people. We've taken a number of steps to increase the effectiveness, not just the numbers, but the actual impact of the program, both on the participants as well as on society, on the communities within which the program operates. We've sought to do that through creating partnerships with other government departments, and I think one can mention in particular the Department of Correctional Services, in terms of them making land available for participants to be growing, to be establishing vegetable gardens, but also the Department of Small Business Development in providing training in the establishment of small businesses and cooperatives, so that CWP participants are able to use the skills and the experience that they pick up on the program and translate that into actual economic opportunities. And if one goes to a site like Erasmus, just outside of Tswane, you know, the participants on that program have established more than 20 cooperatives. So, secondly, I mean, we've sought also to strengthen partnerships with non-governmental organizations, and through that to enhance the effectiveness of the program. The fourth point is that despite the many successes that we've had in terms of the rollout of the program and increasing its effectiveness, the program has been beset with some very, very serious administrative challenges. And I think we need to just be very open upfront about that from the outset. And I think the DG will indicate both what those problems are and the steps that we've taken to address them. Without seeking to make any excuses for the very real weaknesses that are there, I think we must indicate that CWP is in many ways, I mean, it's a very innovative, very creative program, in that it seeks to create partnerships between government and civil society organizations. That's one of the great strengths of the program. It also leads to difficulties in accountability and in compliance with certain statutory and other prescripts. And I think a lot of what we've been trying to do together with National Treasury and the government's technical assistance program is to try and arrive that keeps that flexibility of the program, but yet ensures the ability to account and to avoid audit problems. Lastly, Chair, and I think here we must also just be very open and upfront, there have been challenges with the program in terms of wrongdoing or allegations of wrongdoing by both officials within the department as well as participants and some of the implementing agents. I just want to stress up front that we have an absolutely zero tolerance approach to fraud and corruption, especially in a program like this that seeks to benefit the poorest of the poor. So when those issues have come to our attention, we have instituted investigations. Some of those investigations are now either complete or nearing completion, and I'm sure the DG will also refer in his presentation to those, and the steps that have been taken to deal with those matters. So, Chair, with that, if I could then hand over to the DG to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, my colleagues. I will start by introducing the team that is with us to support us. The first person I'll introduce is Mr. I'll just ask them to wave their hands so that the honourable members can see them. We've got Mr. George C. Tisho, who's the acting CWP program manager. Okay. Then we've got Dr. Mugadi, who is the executive manager of CWP, over there behind there. And then the third one, we have Mrs. Kahu Shabalala, who is the CWP finance manager. And then we have Mrs. Dorothy Sneeman, the COCTA CFO, particularly DCOC, not COCTA as a whole. And then we have Ms. Sunita Ramanand, the executive manager, internal auditor. And we have Ms. Gigi Gosnell, the head of the DG's office. And we've got Tando Nkemeza in the DM's office, from the DM's office, and Lewang Telkani, who is our parliamentary officer. And of course, lastly, we have Mr. Mohammed Bobbitt, who is the special advisor to the minister. I am, honorable members, going to the DM has already dealt with the introduction that I was going to deal with, including the statement of intent for CWP. He has also given a little bit of the performance. I'll go straight away to the observations. I'll start on the slide which speaks to the observation of CWP, which is, slide. Point number four in there. We're saying that according to the research, I think that is not the right slide, I think. That's not the right one. Perhaps if you could stick to the copies that we have. I'll not use the one on there. If we go to the observation slide, it will be slide slide number six. Yes. And then we're saying CWP has attracted a number of interested parties, as the DM has indicated, that in terms of what it does and how it has touched the lives of people in those localities. It then attracted a number of interested parties. As a result, several studies have been conducted focusing on the impact of this program. The first was conducted by the Center for the Study Violence and Reconciliation, done during August 2013 and March 2015. Furthermore, the Institute for the Security Studies conducted a study on the CWP based on the research undertaken by the Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation, and they were focusing on the impact of CWP on intimate partner violence, collective violence, and crime in general, a matter which was not originally, intended, but it then had these spin-offs. In addition, in 2013, the International Labour Organization in Geneva also conducted a study focusing on the employment sector with special reference to CWP. Is this the right one? Yeah. Furthermore, the research conducted by the Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation noted CWP contributed as follows to the economic, socioeconomic, social inclusion. It asserted that the CWP wages itself contribute to economic social inclusion, reintroduces habits and discipline of work, increases social bonds and community support, enhances participants' dignity and sense of work, improves community development, among others. What is the current reality? The DM has alluded to some of the current challenges that are facing us. The CWP is faced with challenges due to the nature of its implementation model, which entails working with non-profit organizations, contracted as implementing agents. And of course, the distance between the national department and the locality where this implementation is taking place. And the CWP challenges were highlighted by audit findings conducted by the Auditor General for the first time when they were brought to the fore. Government Technical Advisor Center, GTEC, also focused on project management and the findings, as well as the findings of the forensic audit that was conducted from 2014-2015. If we look at the transition from the three-tier single to single-tier model, with effect from the 1st of April 2012-2013 financial year, a three-tier model comprising lead agents, provincial implementing agents, and local implementing agents was introduced. The model entailed working with more than 50 implementing agents, and it was in effect until 31st March 2014. It was replaced by the current single-tier implementation model on the 1st of April 2014, following a decision to improve program efficiency by decreasing the number of implementing agents and channeling funds saved through this change to the enrollment of an increased number of participants. The decision resulted in 9 implementing agents being contracted to implement the program. As the current model yielded desired results, and I'm saying no, not quite so, especially because of the challenges. There have been unintended implications that emerged after phasing out the three-tier model, and there are lessons that we have learned as well in that process. What are the implications for the single-tier model? Although the single-tier model has been able to address the challenge of the program having to pay project management fees for more than 50 implementing agents, with it came added program management responsibilities, which entailed a CWP unit taking on some former lead agent functions. These functions included, among others, developing framework and tools for site implementation, direct monitoring and management of implementation agents with regard to site implementation, enforcing implementation agent compliance with statutory provisions and program norms and standards, and lastly, addressing challenges, complaints arising from sites, making participant payments, as well as verifying and consolidating provincial implementation agent reports. DECOP ensured that some resources were provided and systems in CWP established to effectively carry out the additional responsibilities. 3 specialized support units were established to focus on the pertinent program delivery areas, such as monitoring partnerships, the DM alluded to the partnerships as well, policy and research, training and reporting to further strengthen the unit's capacity and delivery. Coming to the forensic audit, during September 2015, a forensic audit was commissioned by the department in respect of possible tender and procurement irregularities within the CWP. This investigation was a result of concerns raised by the Auditor General. The Auditor General was the first to bring these things to the fore, as I said earlier. The department immediately appointed a service provider to deal with this matter through the National Treasury database. This review or investigation was conducted in January 2016. However, this was viewed as a phase one investigation due to the extent and severity of the findings, we then brought in the second phase. Initially, we thought that it would just be a one-phase issue. And when they were investigating further and further, it was found that we needed to look at the following areas. And the scope included the following. One, irregularities with regard to pay. Non-compliance to the CWP implementation manual. And lastly, non-compliance to the agreed upon service level agreement between the implementing agents and DCOP. During September 2016, the department appointed Deloitte and Touche to conduct a forensic audit on possible financial irregularities by the implementing agents. The scope of this audit also included the 33 cases of fraud allegations that were received by the department. That also included whistleblowers and management as well. In November 2016, the department extended the scope of the forensic audit to include a review of the CWP management information system as well, so that we synchronize it with the COCTA information system to avert some of the high risks that were identified by the Auditor General. The completion date for this project is 31st of March 2017. On completion of phase one of the forensic audit investigation, several recommendations were made and also immediately actioned by the department. This related primarily to disciplinary action against three officials. Letters were written to them. They were given the opportunity to indicate why disciplinary action should not be taken against them. With the consultation of senior counsel letters, were drafted to these officials detailing the department's intention well. I've said that. Pursuant to the receipt of these responses, senior counsel was requested to provide an opinion on how to proceed with this matter. Senior counsel also worked with two other legal people, you know, to look at this matter because of its complexity. Subsequently, the department was advised that the case against the three officials was not strong enough to be pursued further. A decision was then taken that this matter be put on hold until the last phase, which will be finalized by end of March, you know, to look at what would be coming out of, you know, the further investigation and so on. But from the legal opinion that I've read and the letters, you know, from the former DG that was written to these officials, I was also convinced that there was nothing tangible that these people could be charged at that point. The second phase of the audit is still in progress, as I've said, and is expected to be finalized by the 31st of March 2017. However, the investigation of 29 cases of possible fraud and corruption, as reported by whistleblowers and management, were finalized. And the reason why we have also decided that we should no longer prolong this investigation, it is because, as you will see in the next slide, it seems to us that we are chasing 8,000 rand using millions. And because we were serious in terms of making sure that we unearth everything that was under the stone and so on. So in our view, when I went through all those cases that were investigated, we found that we are spending millions with this consultant chasing small amounts. Now, that is the summary of the cases, the problem. Now, when I interrogated them further, you know, they were mainly relating to attendance register that were fraudulently signed and the ghost employees. And when you look at the amount, 200 rand here and so on. So the whistleblowers, when the internal audit went to further investigate, they found there was, no substance in many of those things, and so on. So that is the summary of those cases, and we will chase, as the DM said, we will chase even a cent to make sure that, you know, disciplinary actions are taken to those that are found to be guilty. With regard to the above mentioned, the following recommendations were made, among others. 7 cases can be closed, as these were either actioned by the implementing agent. There is one where someone was charged by the courts for 6 months in jail. There are some of those cases where the implementing agents have dismissed the people, they've taken action, and so on. And there are those where there was no sufficient evidence. So it is the 7, they fall under that category of the 7 ones. And in terms of the 8 cases that require disciplinary action by the implementing agents against the said supervisors and site administrators, so those we are also ensuring that by the end of March this year, those are finalized as well. However, with the 14 cases that have been, we have reported the 14 cases to SAPS, the potential loss is that amount. And initially, there was a view that perhaps we get back to implementing agents and so on, but we took a stand that because the budget comes from us, we've got to report these cases. So we reported them. And each of these 14 cases, they are worth 200 rand per case, 100 rand, and some of the people are dead, and they are not even in those sites and so on. And going forward, what is critical, as the DM has said, we're ensuring that we put in measures in place to make sure that all these witnesses can be averted. And the internal control deficiencies that have been identified by the AG, the DM has already indicated that we acknowledge that there are still many challenges in the operations of CWP, especially with regard to internal control area. And those areas that have been identified by the AG relate to oversight and monitoring, financial management, procurement and contract management, compliance management, HR management, IT management, and financial health. And this slide, the AG raised the issue of large amounts of irregular expenditure and care and possible fraud, etc. So in terms of the actions, it's the same thing that I've talked about earlier, that the work that we're doing to pursue this matter. And the second one, inappropriate design as a result of the involvement of the program since inception, and related systemic and capacity challenges. The department is exploring different implementation options and funding mechanisms to address the current design and systemic challenges in collaboration with the role players, especially Treasury, as well as GTEC, that government entity of Treasury that has been working with us. And the department, in collaboration with National Treasury, is in the process of considering the most appropriate interim arrangement for the next 6 months. And the human resource capacity of the CWP will be progressively strengthened within the funding envelope for compensation of employees. A lot of work in this regard has already been done, as you will see a slide that will come, where we have employed a number of people in the back office to be able to respond to some of these issues which have to do with internal controls situation. The existing CWP team will be empowered through dedicated interventions to strengthen the monitoring and evaluation and so on. I need to say at this point that as CWP, as we know, that is a program that requires program management and also project management skills and so on. We're looking in that direction so that at least, you know, we can avert some of these challenges that that we've been facing over some time. Now, the expiry of contracts of implementing agents, saying on the 31st of March 2017, the current contract with the 9 implementing agents for the CWP will lapse. By then, new IA should have been appointed and orientated to ensure a smooth handover. And most importantly, the dilemma we face, as we said earlier, is because of this investigation that will conclude by end of March, you know, so that we get to the bottom of that as well. The PMU, which is the Project Management Unit intervention, will assist the department to fast track the recruitment process of the new non-profit organizations under much tighter measures informed by the audit report. As you know, we'll talk more about that in the following slide. Now, the critical issue here is that what caused the delay in the appointment of the new implementing agents. I've talked about this GTEC earlier, that it had done thorough assessment of the CWP business processes in the past. And DCOC and GTEC facilitated a workshop in mid-2016 to review the pros and cons of the current implementation model and to consider alternative approaches which were further analyzed for their inherent strengths and so on. And the integrated implementation model was considered as the preferred one. And of course, we couldn't proceed on our own. We needed to work with Treasury. And we're also mindful of the challenges that we have experienced in the past and currently experiencing. And furthermore, GTEC facilitated working sessions to look at those different options. 5 possible model options were advanced and explored. It was the full service model, the devolution model, the conditional grant transfer model, the integrated implementation model, and the independent development trust as the implementing agent model. Following an analysis and indicating advantages, disadvantages, and risks entailed in each model, a compromise model termed the integrated implementation model, comprising elements of the current model and the full service model, was adopted. However, questions remain about the extent of the department's liability for accounting for site assets, because that's the main thing, you know, accounting for assets that are not in the department itself. The short-term extension, DCOC requested approval of a 6-month extension of...
Maybe it would be worthwhile just dwelling for another minute or two on this point 7. You see, because the again, I think we need to be open and we need to share with the committee what exactly the difficulties are. I think we've been very open to say where there have been allegations of wrongdoing, either fraud, corruption, criminal activity. Those things must be treated as such. They must be investigated. Where there's evidence, either disciplinary or criminal action or both must be taken. But there are other areas that lead to us getting qualified audits, which are not necessarily fraud or crime or a wastage of money. But there are difficulties in accounting for certain things. Those things are serious because the inability to account properly opens the door. It creates the space for those other wrong things to happen. But they're not necessarily in themselves. And I think, did you just unpack for the committee exactly that issue that we're dealing with? Otherwise, it becomes difficult to understand why we're busy exploring all of these other models and why we are in the situation that we are currently.
Okay. Can I ask Mr. Sitisho maybe to elaborate on that? Mr. Sitisho, if you could just explore a little bit on the options. Yes. for your company. Yes.
Chairperson Honorable Members, good morning. I think the primary challenge, which is a good thing.
Thank you. as the Deputy Minister indicated, we are presently in all 234 local municipalities and metros in the country. We are actually in even more sites because we have municipalities that have got more than one site. This presents the challenge then of the department being able to account for every single piece of assets, equipment, tools and materials that are procured on our behalf by implementing agents. Now, with effect from the current financial year, 2017-18, National Treasury has informed us that not only will we be responsible for accounting for assets, but we are also going to be responsible for accounting for that spade, digging fork, consumables that are procured at each of the sites that we are responsible for. Now, prior to 15-16, when the department obtained a negative audit outcome, we had not, as a department, been required to account for CWP assets in the department's financial statements. It came to our knowledge only in February 2016 that we'd be required to do so. At that stage, we visited each and every one of our sites to verify assets that were there, to make sure that the assets that implementing agents had claimed for actually did exist in each of the sites. Indeed, we found that some of the assets could not be accounted for. Some could not be accounted for because the current implementing agents had inherited them from the prior implementing agents. And there were no source documents available. There were no invoices, there were no delivery notes. Therefore, we could not obtain values, actual values, that would form part of the department's annual financial statements. So as a result, there was limitation of scope that was declared by auditors because they had no way of determining the full extent of our expenditure without the detail that had been provided, had the source documents for all the procured assets been available. So that was the primary challenge that led to a qualification with regard to assets and the department's financial statements, amongst other things. Thanks, Chairperson.
I think just not to interrupt too much, but you see, that a lot of time and effort between our own team and National Treasury, the Chief Procurement Officer and the Accountant General in particular, together with GTAC, the Government Technical Assistance Centre, has gone into dealing with exactly that problem. On the one hand, how do we, as COGTA, enhance our capacity and our systems to monitor and to do some of that accountability, but also how do we move to a model that is putting the responsibility for that very detailed, on-the-ground level of accountability with the implementing agents, but at the same time not abrogating our responsibility to exercise oversight of that. So I think when the DG then refers to these different models and also to the transitional measures, it's all speaking to trying to deal with that issue.
Thank you.
back to you, DG.
Thanks very much, Jan. And then DCOC requested approval of a 6-month extension of current non-profit organization contracts in January 2017 to allow time to finalize the appointment processes and requisite tools, as well as to ensure that all necessary controls are in place. Treasury gave conditional approval, raising 6 critical aspects we needed to consider to ensure that our systems and procedures are efficient and effective. And on the 13th, this coming week, we're having a follow-up meeting to finalize this matter. As a result of these engagements, we have considered acquiring short-term external project management requisite skills to ensure that in the next 3 to 4 months, there will be stability in the CWP in the area of the business operations of the CWP and the things that Auditor General has been raising regarding system structural issues, and where they will assist us to clearly map out also the way forward. This action will mitigate the high risks in 2017-18 and will inform future CWP plans. And in other words, this is the proposal that was made by GTEC. It was one of the options that they've proposed to say phase one, if we have stabilization phase and the new institutional arrangements in terms of the models that DM was talking about. In phase one, as recommended by GTEC, after the assessment of CWP a few years ago, it proposed a more viable and sustainable option of appointing an external team to support CWP management and to build a well-capacitated project management unit for at least a year to stabilize the CWP and so on. They actually recommended 3 to 5 years. We don't want to keep them for that long. At least if they are there for a year, we know that they will be able to assist us to set up the systems and so on. We will build our own capacity in terms of project management and so on, because I think that is the most crucial thing that has also been missed. And the other critical thing is the appointment of the program manager. We've been having a number of people that have been acting for quite some time, and that has affected, you know, the effectiveness of CWP in some areas, particularly in the internal deficiencies. And we have advertised several times, the first time and the second time we couldn't succeed, and then the third time in the next on Sunday we'll be advertising again, and we hope that we'll find somebody, because as we get the external PMU to come and assist us, we are not outsourcing our responsibility. The DDG will, you know, they'll be accountable to the DDG. I will not take my eyes off this task. That's why I'm presenting today, because it's an important program that we need to actually make sure that we shape it up. And the second phase, we need to establish appropriate institutional home to be agreed. I indicated the distance, as it was alluded to earlier, between local space and where we are, what Dr. Mugadi alluded to, you know, the spade and little thing there and so on. It is quite complex in that regard. And what are the critical steps in the next 6 months? During the stabilization phase, the department will continue to prioritize the appointment of the DDG. A PMU service provider will report to the DDG, as I've said, as the program manager, as the PMU will take over the core functions relating to business processes, which has to do with the design, re-engineering processes, internal control measures, and so on, and those issues that quite often are flagged by Auditor General, Treasury as high-risk areas. Furthermore, the service provider will prioritize all the transitional processes that the DM was talking about, and from the current to newly recruited NPOs within the shortest possible timelines. During 2017-18, the service provider will also assist with the process of induction for the new NPOs, and in terms of service level agreements, we'll have to make sure that they are tightened enough to make sure that those weaknesses that we have experienced are vetted. In addition, the PMU will map out the business process re-engineering, deal with the perennial internal control deficiencies confronting CWP. I've emphasized this point. They will be expected to transfer skills to the current CWP cohort as well. As we can see in this next slide. This next slide, we're saying that while we're having that vacancy of the DDG, we went ahead to fill these critical back office positions to ensure that they deal with that capturing of data and all those necessary things that need to be done. Integrated project plan for CWP. What is the plan going forward? And we are saying in terms of the appointment of the CWP program manager, I've indicated that in the next weekend we'll be advertising. Hopefully, because this appointment is done by cabinet, it takes a little bit longer, but we're saying hopefully by the 1st of June, this post must have been finalized, and the establishment of the PMU, appointment of required project management capacity within CWP, within 2 months, by 30th of May, the terms of reference would have been developed, the issuing of that tender, appointment of service provider. However, we are also considering GTEC itself because they've got project management skills and so on. So we will be looking at what is cost effective and so on, and how we can get this faster. And number three, extension of implementing agents, contracts, consultation with National Treasury, as well as the implementing agents themselves. There we're talking about the letters to implementing agents and the timeline. Follow-up engagements with National Treasury by 31st of March. We already are working on the 13th of March to be able to iron out these outstanding issues with Treasury. Appointment of new implementing agents, request and evaluate proposals from prospective service providers by December 2017. And the appointment as well during that time, the handover process and so on, we're giving it at that sort of timeline. Lastly, we're saying CWP staff will continue to monitor the implementation of CWP norms and standards. They'll continue to build partnerships, provide policy advice, and report to the IMC on public employment program coordinating structure. Thank you very much, Chairs.
Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation and the Deputy Minister. Honorable members who can then entertain the report, have your views, Honorable MLM, Honorable Masondo, Honorable Mteto.
Thanks, Chair. First of all, let me commend the department on a program that is obviously of immense value. But I do have a couple of concerns. The first is, what are the tangible results of this program? In other words, apart from beneficiating the people who are working there, what are the tangible outcomes that we are seeing on the ground in the municipalities where these programs are being implemented? The second, Chair, is I note that during the first sort of year of the program's existence, it created about 89,000 work opportunities in 45 municipalities, and yet in the current year, in 234 municipalities, it only created 238,000 opportunities. It doesn't seem as if there has been the growth across all the municipalities that there should have been, and maybe the department can explain that. Then lastly, Chair, I'm a little bit concerned that we are becoming, or we're falling into the trap that SASA have fallen into about extension of contracts and so on and so forth. Let me explain why I say this. At various points in the slides, there are references to the appointment of new implementing agents and so on. And the first one is on slide 20, where it says, on the 31st of March, the current contracts of the 9 implementing agents will lapse. By then, new implementing agents should have been appointed and oriented to ensure a smooth handover. So that means by the end of this month, there should be new implementing agents. If we then go three pages further on, under critical issues short-term extension, it says DCOG has requested an approval of a 6-month extension of current NPO contracts to allow time to finalize the appointment processes. Treasury gave conditional approval, so that means that I would guess by the end of July, because it was in January, a 6-month extension takes me to the end of July. You can explain why. I mean, 6 months on January says to me July. But anyway, then if we go to the timeline, and here we're talking about, that timeline. If you go to the third item there, it says extension of implementing agents by the 31st of March. So now we're no longer talking about appointment of new implementing agents. Now we're talking about extending that. And then it says at 5 that the appointment of the new implementing agents will happen in December. So which date are we talking about here? Are we talking about 31 March? Are we talking about July? Are we talking about December? What date are we actually going to have these new implementing agents in place? I'm a bit worried about that, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to start with the point that has been raised by a member, Miller. And this really is about the question of the impact, the bigger picture. What impact is this program making on communities? Because unless we have an idea of that, then everything will fail to fall in place. What is the big picture? What impact? And it's very useful in these instances to actually quote examples, concrete examples of that which is happening in communities. For instance, one is aware of work done in certain townships where there's walkways now, and that kind of thing and so on. So it's very useful to use actual examples. I think it's very, very important to do that. The second issue that I want to raise relates to the appointment of a program manager. I mean, it can take a century to appoint a program manager. A person is appointed, the person gets to do the work and, et cetera, et cetera. You can have a situation where when we have acting persons, even in small projects, an acting person and so on, it can't be. So we need to really sort out the question of the program manager being. The third one I want to raise in relation to this thing of the first investigation, second investigation, and as outlined here, first phase, second phase, third phase, and so on. We really need to ensure that we don't spend too much money on issues
that are caused, are supposed to have caused the government very little. There must be a balance. It's just one that one is adding there. That let's avoid the obvious. I mean, if you spend 2 million rand to chase 8,000 rand, there's not a problem there. So logical, let's do the right logical thing. The next issue is the question of disciplinary processes. Now, on the question of discipline, of course, it must be seen to be fair. It must be seen to be fair. But you must also deal with cases timeously. Government is very notorious. I thought by this time, having a little bit of experience with government, we'll be talking a different story altogether about failure to attend to this thing timeously. You know, when the first government, democratic government, came into place, there were literally hundreds of cases that were unattended to. Literally hundreds of cases. And a lot of work had to be done to appoint private independent agencies to try and speed up the work. Let's hope that this does not also go on forever. So I'm just raising the question of timelessly attending to this matter. The other thing is also that there's a lot of value in concluding these matters quickly. It does send a message to whoever is within the system that if you are found, there will be consequences and matters will be pushed to logical sort of conclusion. Logical conclusion. Otherwise, chairperson, I think that it's a very good this report is a good, very good attempt at accounting, and I think that this tradition must be maintained within the department going forward. There's still a lot of work to be done, but one is hopeful that this tradition and culture, or this culture and tradition, will grow and become even stronger. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair. I really appreciate my chair is only issue of the accountability. You see, a lot has been said of identifying the challenges that are there, particularly on the implementing agencies. But I'm not getting any modeling to ensure that, you know, come 3 years down the line, these issues will be arrested and not repeated now and then. Is there any model, maybe a national model or provincial model or local model that the department is focusing on it so that to ensure that this issue of accountability, it doesn't become the choir of the day, Chair? That's all from my side. And the issue of the value for money, I've noticed that really they've been chasing even leases that year and not seen the real crocodile in the dam here. But Honorable Masondo has also talked about the value for money. Let's check that if there's really things like 10,000, 8,000, yes, it's fraudulent, but we must really see the bigger picture.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to take us to another issue that perhaps in the previous term I somehow asked about, and that has to do with the with this program as such being taken to another level with regard to ensuring that these EPW beneficiaries do not end up with these small jobs, but end up becoming entrepreneurs themselves. And just wanted to hear from the department how far it has gone with regard to that process. Because I believe that we need to escalate it to that level. The work that they get should expose them to other opportunities, or the department should give those opportunities to them. And I also had to ask about the causes that should be given to them in order for them to get that upward mobility. I even referred to the issues of articulation of courses and also portability of modules. Whether if the department is offering that, can a person go up to the other level? Do they recognize prior learning? That I think the department need to assist us with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me join those who are appreciating the presentation. I've got two issues here. I'm not sure with other departments. I think the public works, is it CWP or is it the same program? But then my question would be, you know, we are dealing with this thing, creating programs that they seek to empower our youth and our people to overcome the challenge of poverty. But my worry would be, is there any coordination between these other departments, because they also have a similar program. And the other challenge would be the monitoring of this program, because really I've looked into this other one which has been implemented by the Public Works. Those people who are employed or who are taken into this program, they just go there and register that they are on duty, but there is no one who's monitoring them. They will sit under the tree, under the shade, then 4 o'clock or 2 o'clock they go home. Then there's nothing that has been done. But if maybe this program was going to be monitored, I think it was going to go for a long way, especially in our towns, because it is implemented in municipalities. But our municipalities, especially the towns, they are so dirty. If maybe we can assist municipalities to ensure that this program, they deal even with cleaning the towns, the parks, because we are saying we develop their skills. Maybe some of them, they will be doing the, what is it, the gardening and whatever. But if we are not monitoring, then there's a problem. So my concern is only on that, on those two things, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think mine is a short one. But firstly, I think the report must be appreciated and the presentation as such. Mine, I think the other members have asked a question about the impact on the community, but I think I want to break it even finer to say, what is the value add in terms of the individual? Are there any opportunities of upskilling in terms of people who are taken onto these programs? But the second one is just a comment to say that if the recruitment process in terms of you know, someone to manage the program is not urgently dealt with, there'll always be challenges and some shortcomings on the program itself. Because for me, I think it's critical that we kind of cut down the turnaround in terms of appointment of personnel because if that is not done, there'll be challenges again when the report comes, which would say that the program manager was not employed for the first 8 or 10 months, and so they still challenge. I'm saying that for me, the turnaround for appointment of personnel is critical in such programs. Otherwise, we'll be sitting with challenges all the time. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, my concern is there any information regarding those people who are involved in this program as to whether these are not people who are perennially working while others are not getting the opportunity to be engaged in this program? Because quite often, there is no openness regarding the engagement, employment of these people in this short-term project. Is there any, you know, proof to say that these people on quarterly basis are being changed or monthly, whatever the case may be? Because, you know, in the rural areas, in the municipalities, you know, you find people working there, you know, for years on end without, you know, people being shifted around, so that almost everybody had the opportunity to benefit from this project.
Okay. Chairperson, thank you very much, and just to thank the members for those questions and comment. I'm going to touch upon a couple of things and then hand over to the DG and the team to deal with some others. I think maybe just at the outset, it would be good to remind ourselves of where CWP comes from and where it fits in within the totality of government's social assistance programs and public employment programs. I mean, it emanates out of a job summit that recognized that the nature of the South African economy is such that there's a substantial number of people who are, in a sense, structurally underemployed, and are going to be for the medium or longer term. And hence there was a need for an intervention like Community Work Program. Now, Community Work Program is run by COGTA. It runs on the basis that a participant works for 2 days a week, 8 days a month, up to 100 days a year. There's no end. It's an open-ended program. It's also a very flexible program. So, for example, especially in rural areas, participants who during planting or harvest seasons would work as farm workers but be unemployed once those seasons are passed would be able to come in and out of Community Works program. When it's not harvest season or whatever, they in CWP, when it's harvest season, they can go and work. It also means that people can run their own gardens, their own businesses, or go out and try. and if things don't work out, they're always welcome to come back to the program. And I think that's important because that would be distinct from a program like, for example, the Extended Public Works Program, which is run by the Department of Public Works, where people work full-time but for a definite, for a limited period, I think of up to 9 months, 6 to 9 months. The programs obviously address different needs, they have different impacts. I think the point is that on the one hand, we don't want to, because of the nature of CWP and the type of challenges that it seeks to address, we don't want to put a definite cutoff point and say to someone, after 6 months or a year, you must go. The reality is that that person has nowhere to go to in many instances. On the other hand, we do recognize that there are challenges if people remain on CWP for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and in that 5 years, they haven't picked up any skill, any experience, any opportunity to move beyond the program. And that's why we're putting so much effort into these partnerships. Chair, the second point is that there are many, many public employment programs, other social assistance programs, employment creation programs being run by government. And it's for that reason that it was decided to establish an interministerial committee on public employment programs, which is chaired by the Deputy President, that brings together all of those departments, like COGTA, Public Works, Water Sanitation, Environmental Affairs, etc., that run public employment programs. And a lot of work going into trying to streamline those programs, get them to support each other, also bring other government programs into supporting these public employment programs and increasing their impact. Chair, I would want to maybe make just leave a suggestion in the air for the committee to say that it might be worthwhile, on the one hand, doing some oversight visits to different CWP sites. Because I think on the one hand, you will see programs that will really leave you very excited and very inspired, and you'll also see others that are not quite where they need to be. That's the one. The second is it might be worthwhile to speak to other portfolio committees that are overseeing similar programs and either have a joint hearing or maybe have joint oversight visits to some of those sites. In terms of the tangible results and outcomes, I think there are a number of studies that we could make available to the committee. The one would be the International Labour Organization's report, which the DG referred to. Also, some very interesting studies done by the Centre for Violence and Reconciliation, especially on the crime combating, crime limiting, and social cohesion promoting value of the community work program. And it's quite fascinating how in areas where there are well-run CWP programs, how levels of crime and especially of domestic and gender-based violence have come down where those programs are present. In the budget debate last year, we gave some stats, and I think DG, maybe some members of the team could make those available, a fuller set. But I mean, in Gauteng, for example, CWP participants cleaned almost 300,000 square meters of public spaces, rivers, and canals. 1,051 illegal dumping sites were cleared. 2,076 community gardens were maintained, 81,000 square meters of cemeteries were cleaned, 10,800 children benefited at creches, 2,058 desks were refurbished and 34,000 learners benefited from scholar patrols. So, I mean, the program is having a real impact in communities where it's being well and properly run. But, I mean, let's also be open and honest that the program is not implemented with a uniform degree of effectiveness. And that's why I think the DG has indicated that we're enhancing our monitoring and evaluation capacity. The second, and the DG can talk to this in greater detail, but Mr. Millen, the issue of the six-month extension, remember that's a six-month extension from when the contracts expire. Yes. So that, yeah. Yeah, the DG will explain his dates there, but it's not, the extension doesn't run from January. The issue of the investigations, I agree we mustn't let millions chase sense. But at the same time, I mean, I emphasized at the beginning, we really have a zero tolerance approach. 1 rand stolen is 1 rand too many. And yes, we must be judicious in how much we invest in investigations, but the point is just often the theft of 200 rand, as small as it might be, indicates, it points to a systemic vulnerability in the program. And for that reason, often it's worthwhile investigating even something that on the surface might appear trivial, because it might lead to other things, or it might point to systemic deficiencies which, if cured, will prevent bigger losses. I think just in answer to Professor Kubisa, yeah, I mean the point of enhancing the economic impact of this program is absolutely vital. And DG, maybe some members of the team can just speak now and also provide a report on a site like the Erasmus site, where we partnered with the Department of Small Business Development. There were about, I think it was about 120 participants formed themselves into about 23, I think, cooperatives. They got training in how to run and manage a cooperative, and they've been provided with a certificate for that. That certificate now enables them to apply for up to 100,000 rand grant from Small Business Development to take their business to a next level. So there's a lot of opportunities being created there, and for that reason we're trying to partner much closer with departments that we can assist those initiatives in taking off. And I think just lastly, also trying to link CWP more closely to the Back to Basics program to address things like filthy cities and towns. I mean, where you have a CWP program, there shouldn't be filth. Thanks.
Thanks very much. The Honorable Maluleka, the issue of coordination and monitoring, there is indeed regular meetings with CPWP team. This afternoon at 2 o'clock, I have a meeting with the DG of EPWP, and to look at how we synchronize this work much closer together with the, and so there is that monitoring as well that is taking place. And as far as the other issues of accountability, Honorable Mthethwa, and so on, you know, I think you were just making a point that it is the importance of ensuring that there is monitoring and accountability. And also, you also indicated that we should look at best practices on how other departments are doing this and so on. We take note of that and so on. And the turnaround, the issue of employment and the turnaround time, that's a good point made. We take the point that acting never helps any organization. Acting brings in uncertainty and instability in organizations. We take points, we take that one, and the issue of extension and the timelines, the GM has already alluded to the fact that it's with effect from the end of March, the extension. But in terms of the appointment, the final appointment of the new NPOs, you know, as soon as the project management unit comes in, you know, we'll be monitoring, we'll be working closely with them as they help us with the processes. There are 6 questions that were raised by Treasury with regard to some of the things relating to our risks and things like that. Now, if we have people, project management service providers that will be working with us, I'm confident that if we can take around 3 months to be able to get the new people coming in and so on. So here we're just being realistic to say, in order for us not to repeat the mistakes of the past of just rushing for the sake of rushing into these things, it will be better if we have timelines like this. For example, the number 6 there, when we talk about handover process to the new IA, that handover process, you know, by that time we would have been, as a department, you know, we would have owned the whole process that the PMU would have initiated and that kind of thing and so on. And I believe that by that time we will be able to hand over that the whole process to the new people, even running the induction processes ourselves. But the critical thing is dealing with these many things, high risks that are currently being raised and so on. So that's as far as that extension is concerned. But there are specific questions. I think the DM has responded to many of those. But I'm going to ask Dr. Mgadi, you know, if you could elaborate on some of the things that you think I've not covered.
Chairperson, Honorable Kobisa wanted to find out what benefits accrue from participants at an individual level. And I just wanted to highlight the fact that training is one of the critical, most critical secondary objectives of the program. Every participant receives some level of training. There are actually 3 broad areas of training to which participants are exposed. The first type is training that participants receive in order to ensure that the kinds of outputs of their work are solid, they are technically sound. Like, for example, if they fix potholes, participants have to know the ingredients that go into the mixture that's going to make, that's going to fill that pothole in a sustainable way until such time that people that are truly, truly qualified to do that come and fix it in a manner that is going to last longer. So it's important that they get the training that relates to the work that they do. But they also receive training on life skills, like, for example, personal finance management, which helps them not just in the program but in life in general. And the third type is the type that gives them skills that enhances their employability prospects, or that enables them to start their own income-generating ventures. Some receive training as the plumbers, others as welders, bricklayers, sometimes even driver's licenses. We have instances of participants that have since started their own ventures over weekends or all the other days. As Dan mentioned, they work only 2 days a week on the CDLP, and then they have other 3 days and weekends. And because of the skills that they receive in the CDLP, they've been able to form themselves into groups. They do clubbing work in their own communities using those skills. But also, I just thought I would quickly go through some of the pictures that show CDLP participants in action. On the screen there, we see participants working in a community garden. Those vegetables are given out to needy families and communities. Some are given to school feeding schemes, contributed to donated to school feeding schemes, crèches, and so forth and so forth. There you've got CDLP participants assisting in a school nutrition program, cooking for children, others assisting to take care of children at an early childhood development center. Okay, thank you, that's better. They are building a jungle gym at a crèche. They also participate in projects that have to do with the environment. You see them cleaning an illegal dump area on the left-hand side corner, cleaning a river at the bottom picture, recycling plastic, using plastic that has been recycled to make mats, bags, and all of that. In those pictures, they are clearing water drainage systems, which is very, very important now with all the rains that we're having. Some of the flooding that some of the areas in our communities have been experiencing are prevented through the work that CDLP participants are doing. That's real work that saves people's lives. Those pictures show the participants in the process of building a dam. On the left-hand side, they're just starting the digging out. There they are in the middle, actually building the dam, and the last slide shows the actual dam having been built. That slide shows participants building a bridge. This is obviously in a rural area, and one might argue how solid that bridge really is. But in a rural community where children used to walk on water to cross a rivulet to get to school, that bridge serves a very, very important purpose. You see that lady in the center. It also encourages economic activity, although on a small scale. That lady is now able to push her wheelbarrow across to the other side where the school is, where children are now going to buy. The last, on the right-hand side, you see children crossing the bridge on their way from school home. That slide shows a crash somewhere in the Eastern Cape. That's CDLP participants, again in a rural area, renovated, they plastered that, and you can see the difference on the right-hand side. Now, earlier I referred to training that's given to participants as some of the benefits that they get from participating in the program. Those pictures there reflect participants, they're being trained. And of course, it's not just theory, there's also practical training, as shown in that picture of participants receiving computer training. The other participant, top right picture, electrification, and also sewing. So some of these skills, obviously, are skills that go beyond just, the work in the CDLP that contributes to community development, but these participants can take some of these skills to to life outside the CWP, and it can the training that they receive can expose them to other opportunities outside the CWP. Thank you.
I think just lastly,
thank you, Chair. I think lastly, Chair, there was a question that related to the choice of projects that are carried out by the CWP. In every municipality and in every ward where the projects are being taken into consideration, this is done in consultation with the ward councillors as well as the local communities. So these projects are not necessarily dictated to by the department itself. They are community-driven projects. In the forefront, it's mainly, as you can see, 90% are women in those communities who participate. But what is of crucial importance is the partnership that has been alluded to. And I think that, Chair, for the honorable members, it's absolutely important to know that we are not only dealing with government departments and partnerships. We are also dealing with private sector like Sasol. We've got a good partnership with them and many others that we would be waiting for the committee, as the DM has invited the committee to maybe do some side visits. Those side visits would be accompanied by some of our participant partners who are from the private sector assisting in training. In this last 2 months, Chair, in relation to skills development, with the hope of slowing down the revolving door of participants coming in, going out and coming back, which is a safety net for them, we are now trying to engage together with MIG, ourselves, MISA, which is within the same government department, to say we can't be building roads and fixing culverts with municipal infrastructure grant, who also reports to you, Chair. But we don't see those skills being translated to the community work program for the participants to at least exit the program and become somehow permanent employees who are doing maintenance and also infrastructure development in our communities. I think that is what I needed to clarify. Hope that makes sense. Thank you, Chair.
Now, Chair, just to say that the issues of speeding up the filling of positions, especially key strategic positions, and also the finalization of disciplinary processes is something that we have raised very sharply with the DG. He can attest to that. We made our displeasure known in no uncertain terms. So we hope that those processes will be expedited. And lastly, just to thank the committee for a very good interaction. We hope that we can continue along this path and really make what is already a very good program, on the one hand, much, much more impactful on the lives of our citizens, and at the same time to do that in a way that we account properly for the precious resources that have been entrusted to us. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that. And it's a very useful program, and we hope that you will be able to quantify it and as we move on, avoiding the auditor general queries and all that. Taking care of the space is very difficult. Someone is employed somewhere. Where's your village anyway, Professor? I don't go. Professor, where's your village?
Next to your village. No, it's in Tuzini. Tuzini.
Tuzini.
Ongoye. Yeah.
Next to my village in Tsariarai. No. It seems there are a lot of work that Professor Mwale that we have to do. Because if you are going to take care of all inventories, of gloves, all that, overalls, all that, you need really then the machinery that works. Otherwise, the auditor general always send it down and they spend again. The point that Honorable Masondo was raising, 2 million rand chasing 8,000 rand. Some of the people anyway who said yourself, they pass on, you can't find them except you go through the next stage of life. It's a very difficult process, but it's very helpful for us. It's just the entry point, though, is very important. It shouldn't become the professor, I know that you know it said. It doesn't become what we thought is going to be addressing, starting with 3 million people, ended up with 17 million people. Instead of people exiting, people are entering. And then there's no exit, and the entry point and exit generally becomes a problem. Because otherwise, again, it becomes almost an area that is not assisting us to equip people in other areas on that. I guess that TVET College is also, professor, will be very relevant to our program. Because my view is that if they are there with you for 2 days a week, surely they must be encouraged to do something during the 3 days or so. And then because they are organized already, they know what they want to do, they are motivated, there's hope in their mind, in themselves, they are able then to, I think they can be channeled to TVET colleges one way or another, to do something bigger than that to sustain them there forever. Because I think some of them will be there until they pass on. It's not really assisting us a lot to start. Because it's intended to young people, really. Of course, I know that there are also timers like Honorable Professor. We are also working there in yellow overalls. And Mteto is still very young. Professor, you are still part of the program. Yes, you are part of the program. Is that it should be systematical, though, and hopefully colleagues will be able to do so. That while you are talking about unemployability of young people, but we should make them to be employable. One way or another, we must make that impact in the society. That is, they come in, also they exit. Otherwise, the point that was raised, I think, is you, George. That we don't want to remain with people coming in. They go out, they come back again because there's nowhere else to go except within the overall program. This is the program, anyway. It's the intervention program. And then I think as the TM was indicating, after the job summit, that decision was made, that large number of young people are unemployable and they're not in training colleges or training areas. Therefore, they're just there, really, many townships on that. And then, because if it is true in the TM that more and more you don't have resources to sustain the social network brought to the city, because this one also is part of the broader social network, security net, general, modern network on that. I think let us work it out, and we hope that you are going to meet your deadline. You will have people and that are going to assist us to deal with some of these issues. There's a lot of work here, 250,000 now. There are 250,000 now, George, throughout the country.
Throughout the country, Chair.
252,000. Quarter million, that are many. We know that there are still millions and millions of them anyway unemployed, or so we are not even in this program. But there are many, then the management, program management, program unit, I think really go on, and this will assist us a lot to start working on the systematic way. And I think that's very good briefing for us. Honorable Melham, we are happy. I think we are implementing that also in Buffalo City. I'm told that you are in Duna there. Maybe we should employ you to be a program unit manager. Would be a good project manager, Professor. Honorable Melham can be a good project manager there. I don't think anyone can even go for lunch and tea. That will drive them forever working in there. No time to rest. I think we should do that. Very for money, I think we should work out on that. Some of the issues raised by openness and transparency of that process, appointment of people, ensure that as many people as possible are assisted to come and assist us on that issue. I think we are fine. I think the presentation was helpful. Thank you very much for the presentation. It seems now all of us, we know exactly. But the point that was raised though, DG, I hope as you meet in your DG coordinating committee, you also address the issue. I think someone was raising that there are too many working for water, the one who deal with health, I'm told the one who deal with social development type of thing. It seems there are a lot of them. But I don't think we have a clue exactly the impact of it in totality of it to society. It seems there are too many and no one knows any exactly. I'm not sure how many those who are working for water, social development, is assisting in terms of social work, caregivers, and there are a lot of them really that are working in every community. And then I think one way or another at a certain point from would be important to be coordinated at once. I think we can save a lot of resources. One implementing agent dealing with some of these issues. We take the point that you are raising that it's a single implementing agent, not three tier one. I thought that one was a very helpful one anyway at the beginning. For the people managing them, those at the local level, at the provincial level also, those who are at the national level. But it seems now single one. Maybe it would be a combination of the two, the universal one and also civil one would be helpful. Good luck for the work, and we'll hope we'll get a report before the end of the year. Just to ensure that we get a report, the progress made in terms of your timeline, what are the new challenges and how do we then assist members of parliament. We take the challenge, Ted, for that, and come proverb. That we are going to go and visit some of them, really. I think it's very important. Go and visit some of them, Erasmus and other areas, just to see exactly what they are doing. We can learn a lot from that experience. I think we'll take that and coordinate with other departments. I think they will agree with us. And then we go and see what is happening as we are conducting our oversight function. And very helpful for us. And thank you very much for coming. Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Melissa. I hope members you are remaining for one or two things. Thanks, Baraba. Thanks, Baraba. Take care, Baraba.